people who came out of the woodwork to help David for various reasons. And we talked about friends last week, and we looked at all these different ones. What we've talked about so far was we had Ittai, who just came out of the woodwork. He sort of showed up in David's kingdom about the time he was getting run off. And so he came in at the very last minute, but he stuck with David in spite of that. Then we looked at Abiathar and Zadok, and they're the priests who took care of the Ark of the Covenant, and they got sent back into Jerusalem for as spies for David, and their sons were the ones that came out and actually will be helping out in terms of information for David. Well, we looked at them too. Then we looked at Hushai. And Hushai was the interesting because he was sent to be a problem child to Absalom and give him bad advice. And Hushai does that. And we looked at that at the end of last week in terms of this thing. When Hushai, the Archite, his special task was to be an inside job, and the priests were to send information to David. We also looked at the prayer of David for Ahithophel. And this was, Ahithophel was one of the guys that was involved in the betrayal of David for Absalom. And in verse 31 of chapter 15, there is a prayer that David says concerning Ahithophel. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. That's a prayer against someone who is against him. And I talked about those kinds of prayers. You know, in our lives, we deal with a lot of people. And occasionally, we as Christians are always told that we should pray for our enemies and everything like that. But you know what? Sometimes I pray against enemies. Because not everybody has good intent. Now, somebody may be having a bad day, but some people are malicious and evil. And David prays a prayer here, and he says, I want you to deal with this guy because he's a betrayer. And we know that the issue of God and the issue of David is the same one, has to do with loyalty. And we talked about that. Loyalty. Faithfulness is another term, but loyalty is what he's talking about. And so when he does that, he says, I want you to deal with Ahithophel. And we talked about that too. I wanted to pick up at verses, chapter 17, verses 1 to 14. I just want to read those because this is where Ahithophel is his downfall because of that prayer as much as anything. Now, of course, David sent Hushai in there to combat what Ahithophel was saying to Absalom. Moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, let me choose 12,000 men, and I will set out and pursue David tonight, and I will come upon him while he is weary and discouraged and throw him into a panic, and all the people who are with him will flee. I will strike down the king only, and I will bring all the people back to you as a bride comes home to her husband. You seek the life of only one man, and all the people will be at peace. And the advice pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. Now he sent Hushai in there to combat this kind of counsel because Ahithophel had turncoat and was a traitor. Verse 5, then Absalom said, call Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear what he has to say. Now, why would he call him? God may have put it on his heart. You know, there's another guy here. I want to hear what he has to say. And when Hushai came to Absalom, Absalom said to him, thus has Ahithophel spoken. Shall we do as he advises? If not, you speak. And Hushai said to Absalom, this time the counsel which Ahithophel has given is not good. That's an opinion. He just gave one. Hushai said, moreover, you know that your father and his men are mighty men, and they are enraged like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Besides, Your father is expert in war. He will not spend the night with the people. Behold, even now he has hidden himself in one of the pits or in some other place. And when some of the people fall at the first attack, whoever hears it will say, there has been a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. Then even the valiant men, whose heart is like a heart of a lion, will utterly melt with fear, for all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and that those who are with him are valiant men. But my counsel is that all Israel be gathered to you, from Dan to Beersheba, as the sand by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in person. In other words, he said, Ahithophel was going to go do the fight. But he said, no, you need to go yourself. So we shall come upon him in some place where he is to be found, and we shall light upon him as the dew falls on the ground of him and all the men with him. Not one will be left. If he withdraws into a city, then all Israel will bring ropes to that city, and we shall drag it into the valley until not even a pebble is to be found there. And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord has ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel so that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Now, verse 30, verse 14 here, at the end of it, that is a commentary by the writer. Okay? For the Lord has ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel. Refer you back to that prayer that David had. That means that if God favors you, then your prayers will be heard. And I talked about prayer. I've talked about this a lot of times. People wonder whether God hears. Influence is very important. If God has influence with you, you will have influence with God. David would do what God would tell him to do. And so God had influence with him, and he was a man after God's own heart, so God's favor was upon him. Now, you need to hear this. Influence is important. You know that with other people. If you have influence with someone, then you can go up to them and you can ask them for help or whatever. They will hear you, and they may help you or respond to you because of your influence with them. David has influence with God because God has influence with him. Abraham had influence with God because God had influence with him. They had a relationship. Abraham was called the friend of God. And there is that relationship. And part of what we need to understand is our relationship with God is very important. It's not that you believe in God. It's that you have a relationship with God. And when David asked God, because that's what that prayer was, he says, I want you to deal with this guy named Ahithophel. You get it right here at this verse. For the Lord had ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel so that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Now, we're going to talk about Absalom later, but he brought evil upon Ahithophel, I believe, because David said the prayer. So can you pray prayers like that? Yes, but I wouldn't do it just flippantly. But I've dealt with people before, and I said, Lord, I don't know whether this person is just having a bad day or whether they're dealing in evil and maliciousness, but if they're dealing in evil, then I want you to deal with them. And God has told us, he says, that vengeance is mine, I shall repay. And when you really turn people over to God, both the good and the bad, if you do that, if you have influence with God, he is going to listen to those things, and he's going to deal with people and situations and circumstances according to his will. But if you have influence, like with an influence with a person, hey, you know, you come ask me something, if I have no we have no influence, no relationship together, it's very difficult to get somebody to do something for you. But if you have influence, you have a relationship, you can. And David had a relationship with God. So Ahithophel was turned down. Hushai was sent in there as a person to go against Ahithophel's counsel anyway by David. So he's not only a spy, he's an agent. The two priests, Zadok and Abiathar, they are his spy, Abiathar. Verse 15, then Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar, now they're the priests, thus and so did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus and so have I counseled. Now therefore send quickly and tell David, do not lodge tonight at the fords of the wilderness, but by all means pass over, lest the king and all the people who are with him be swallowed up. In other words, he said, so you don't get caught by these guys. That's a spy, and he's got two spies. Now, Jonathan and Ahimaaz were waiting at En-Gedi, a maidservant used to go and tell them, and they would go and tell King David. And these are the boys of Abiathar and Zadok. So they were the messengers to bring information from the two priests who are spies. Okay, you getting all this story? And so both of them went away quickly. Now think about this maiden too. There's a maiden here. There are people in our lives that we may not pay much attention to, but they may have something going on here. This gal, whoever she was a help here, and she actually is going to help these two sons of these two priests. A maidservant used to go and tell them, and they would go and tell King David. So she was the messenger to them from Abiathar and Zadok, for they must not be entering the city. So she would go outside the city, talk to those two boys, young men probably. They're probably men, but in verse 18, but a lad saw them and told Absalom. So both of them went away quickly and came to the house of a man at Bahurim, who had a well in his courtyard, and they went down into it. And the woman, this is that maidservant again. I mean, it is very important that we pay attention in our lives and be intentional in our living. There are people in our lives that pass through our lives or that are around the edges of our lives, and a lot of times we just don't pay any attention to them. This maid is on the peripheral vision, you might say, of this story. But she's there, and she does it. And so this kid sees her talking to those guys, and they told Absalom. And so he went after them. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and scattered grain upon it, and nothing was known of it. So in other words, she hid those two sons of those priests. When Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house, they said, where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan? And the woman said to them, they have gone over the brook of water. So she just lied about that. And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. And so she did that for them in terms of this. You might say that that maidservant is the friend and confidant and also the one who gives information for those two young men, because she could have turned them in and saved her own hide. Got to think about these things. There are things going on in our lives all the time, and sometimes we are in the battles of our lives, and sometimes it has to do with people around us that are bothering us or whatever, that we might be in conflict with, but it might just be the conflicts of just living this life that we run into in terms of things, and there are people around us who can be helpful. They are friends, even though we might not look at them as the ones we would sit down and bear our soul with. but they are friends to us. And this little maidservant here was a friend for those two young men. Verse 21, and after they had gone, the men came up out of the well and went and told King David. They said to David, arise and go quickly over the water, for thus and so has Ahithophel counseled against you. Then David arose and all the people who were with him, and they crossed the Jordan. By daybreak, not one was left who had not crossed the Jordan. And so they were given that, and he carries out the information. You know, spies are important in wars. Spies are important. Verse 23, when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass and went off home to his own city, and he set his house in order and hanged himself, and he died and was buried in the tomb of his father. Now, refer you back to the prayer of David. He says, I want you to deal with this man. And then you look at this, and he said, for the Lord had ordained in verse 14, had ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel. It was good counsel against David. But something got into Ahithophel, and he hung himself, and he died, and he was taken out of the picture. Did God have anything to do with that? I think so. If he is the shield and defender of David, I know he did. And if David is a man after God's own heart and in relationship with God, he has influence with God, and he says, I want you to deal with this guy. Because he's a traitor. He is disloyal. He is unfaithful to the king. And it happens. Verse 24. Then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom crossed the Jordan with all the men of Israel. Now Absalom had set Amasa over the army instead of Joab. Now why would he do that? Well, for one reason is that he actually probably knew, since he deals in traitorous and conspiracy things, he probably knows that Joab is still for David. So he sets his Amasa over the army instead of Joab. Amasa was the son of a man named Ithrah, the Ishmaelite, who had married Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. So in other words, this guy was related to Joab, but he was probably a cousin, first or second cousin, something like that. It's kind of hard. If you started singing this stuff, it'd be a country and western song. And Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. When David came to Mahanaim, Shobi, the son of Nahash, from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and Maker, the son of Amiel, from Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite, from Rogalim, brought beds, basins, earthen vessels, wheat, barley, meal, parched grain, beans, and lentils, honey and curds, and sheep and cheese from the herd, for David and the people with him to eat. For they said that people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Now, here's another group of friends here. Friends of David in his conflicts in life, in the battles of his life, in your life. I want you to think about this. And sometimes you play the role of the friends. Sometimes you're in need of friends. So pay attention to your life. Also pay attention to the peripheral vision of your life, the people that are around you that may not be real close to you, but may be, in fact, okay and for you if need be. David has these people. He never met these guys before. Okay, there's Shobi, Maker, and Barzillai. I would call these guys angels ministering to God, to David. These are friends of David, but they're friends who are on the very much on the peripheral of his life. He doesn't really know them, but there end up being somebody that helps them. Now, we all have people around us that occasionally might help us or we might help them. And you are the star of your movie, by the way. You're the king in your story, and there are people around you. Pay attention and be intentional. David needs some help here because he's on the run again because Absalom's out to kill him and take over his throne and his kingdom. So these three guys are angels ministering to David. That's what I would call these. Now, people, these are friends who meet needs. Ever had anybody just kind of help you out? That's what they're doing. They said, hey, these guys are hungry, they're weary, they're thirsty. And so they just come along and they look at all the stuff that they brought. Beds and basins, earthen vessels, wheat, barley, meal, parched grain, beans and lentils, honey and curds and sheep and cheese from the herd. I mean, they brought in all kinds of stuff for these guys and David's crew. They are friends who meet needs. And I dare say that we all need one now and then to help us meet needs. But the other side of this animal, you could be like these three guys, Shobi, Maker, and Barzillai. Another thing about a friend. And friends come in some strange places. I call these the friends from low places because these are people that are just out there. And at this point in time, David's life gone to hell again. And he's down in the dirties again and he needs some help. And these guys just show up. Ever have had anybody just show up for you? Or more than likely, have you ever showed up for somebody who needed something? You just happen to be around and you saw it. These are friends who meet needs, and a friend knows what is needed. Now, the thing about this story is, and we all need to take it into account, people can be evil. I know the truth, Jesus died because we're no good. And that's the truth. That is every one of us. That includes David, by the way, because we saw him go evil. But a person can be evil. If you want friends, if you want friends, you got to be a friend of people. And one of the things that we do in church, it's a mistake, we tend to spiritualize everything. I mean, you know, We have a tendency to put it all in a spiritual nature, and you really need to take life out of stained glass. You need to take the Bible out of stained glass, and you need to put it into our kind of day-to-day stuff. We tend in church to spiritualize everything. These are friends here who pay the bills. This is somebody that comes along and, hey, gives you a meal or something. This is somebody that comes along with a bag of groceries and says, here, I know you need some help. Here's somebody who goes out and buys you a night at a motel room because you don't have enough money to find any place to stay. This is somebody who might pay your rent. This is somebody who might pay your electric bill or something like that. This is the stuff of life. These three guys here are friends in low places. And we all need them. And by the way, this stuff runs both ways. If you want friends, you got to be a friend. Our attitude is a lot of times to kick somebody when they're down, but these three guys, I want to tell you about them. Shobi, he's an Ammonite, okay? That's what we know. Now, what we know about the Ammonites is that Shobi shouldn't help David at all. Because they've been enemies for a long time, the Israelites and the Ammonites. And yet, Shobi steps up instead of being David's enemy, and he helps him out. That's the first guy. The second guy, by the name of Maker, he's from Lodabar. Now, we've talked about Lodabar before, but the Lodabar means no pasture. That means that Lodabar was a wilderness area in terms of Israel in that area. And people from Lodabar were poor anyway, so they didn't have enough anyway. And Makar could have said, you know, I'm not going to help David. I don't have enough to take care of myself. But he gets in there and he helps. Shobi could have said, I'm not going to help David because he's been an enemy of us, my country, for all this time. But he doesn't. He gets in there and he helps him out. Barzillai. This is a guy who's about 80 years old. He said, I'm retired. I don't need to help anybody anymore. You know, I run into this one with people in church a lot. Well, I'm retired. I've done my job in terms of church. I don't need to do this stuff anymore. Well, Barzillai could have said that too. He said, you know, I'm the old guy here, and I'm just going to sit on the porch and watch him go by. But he doesn't. He gets in there and he helps them out. And he's the old one. And so you have these friends in low places. These are just people off the streets, but they turn out to be David's friends at this particular time. And the fact of the matter is, everybody here at one time or another probably needed a friend, somebody to help you out. And we're not talking about the spiritual things in life. You just needed a hand up, maybe. You know, that's where we got to look at this stuff. We got to take it out of and put it into our own lives. You might be 80 years old, but that don't mean you can't help somebody out if they need some help. You might be not particularly friendly with somebody, but you know, it could be a neighbor who's just a jerk or something like that. But you know what? If they need a little bit of help, you might show up and help them out. And you might not have enough money to help somebody out very well at all, but maybe you could help a little. You see, that's the three guys in low places that are involved in David in terms of his friendship and all that goes with that. And so we're looking at that particular thing. Now, they're the angels that are around us. Sometimes we need those kinds of angels, friends who meet needs. Chapter 18 is about Joab. And Joab is the fifth group of friend here. Joab is, now we're going to look at chapter 18, but this is where he defeats Absalom, is in chapter 18. But David doesn't do that. Joab does that for him. So I'm going to back up, and I'm going to back up on Absalom here in a little bit. But I want to go and look at Joab as David's friend for a couple minutes, and I want to look at that in chapter 19. So we're going to skip 18, and I'll come back to that in terms of when I deal with Absalom here. In chapter 19, verses 1 to 8, Joab, who is probably the most loyal friend that David has, he is the number one general for Israel. And he has been beside David since the very beginning. And he is tough as nails, but he is a loyal friend. And loyalty is the key. Faithfulness, we call it faithfulness, but doggone it, it's loyalty. Chapter 19, verses 1 to 8. It was told Joab, this is after Absalom is been killed. I better back up and just pick up the last couple, three verses on chapter 18. I'll start at verse 31. And behold, the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, good tidings for my lord the king. He's talking to David. For the Lord has delivered you this day from the power of all who rose up against you. That's Absalom and his bunch. The king said to the Cushite, is it well with the young man Absalom? And the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be like that young man. Now, he's basically telling him, he said, nah, he's dead. That's what he's saying, but he's saying it nicely. This is the king, and it is his son. And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you. O Absalom, my son, my son. So this was a death being brought to David's attention, okay? In chapter 19, verses 1 to 8, we get a picture of Joab. And it's really good to understand that this is a kind of friend that sometimes we need too. It was told Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people, for the people heard that day, the king is grieving for his son. And the people stole into the city that day as people steal in, who are ashamed when they flee in battle. The king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son. Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, you have today covered with shame the faces of all your servants who have this day saved your life and the lives of your sons and your daughters and the lives of your wives and your concubines because you love those who hate you and hate those who love you. For you have made it clear today that commanders and servants are nothing to you. For today I perceive that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased. Now therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go, not a man will stay with you this night. And this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now. Then the king arose and took his seat in the gate. And the people were all told, behold, the king is sitting in the gate, and all the people came before the king. Now, I'm here to tell you here, this is Joab. Now, he has been with David since the very beginning. And he is tough as nails. He's the commander of all the armies. He's the secretary of defense, you might say, for Israel. And, buddy, he comes in there and he says, listen, you idiot. He tells him, you need to be get up off your can and do your job, David. He said, these people, you're whining about this son of yours who has been evil to you and all the people who have been good to you, and you're out here just crying all over this place. And he says, you need to get up there and do your job because all these people are for you. And you notice it says they snuck into the city. They were all ashamed. They didn't want to. You know what they really wanted to do? They wanted to have a celebration. But they didn't. Because the king was coming apart because he lost his son, who was as evil as the day was long. And Joab tells him straight, Benny. He says, this kid you had, it was a rotten son. And it's a good thing that he's dead, basically. Now, occasionally, we need friends like this. I don't know how many times over the years I've had occasion to be the person like Joab. But I've also been the recipient of a Joab or two on occasion. And sometimes we need to hear the hard truth. And that's what he's telling him. He says, here's the hard truth, David. Your son was evil. And he would have destroyed the entire country. And he would have killed all your wives, your concubines, and your children. And he would have done that because he's an evil person. And you need to know that truth. And sometimes we have to do those things too. You know, I know that I've been involved in a couple, three interventions at times over the years, and somebody needs to get the hard truth into somebody. And Joab is David's friend. And that's the reason why he gets in his face. And sometimes we need a friend like that. Somebody to get into our face about something that's going on or one something we're doing or not doing or something like that. And you know, I've had that happen to me on occasion from people around me. I've done it to people occasionally that are around me. And you have to understand something. Joab is not, he is the best friend that David's got, but David is still the king. You are the king of your movie, your life. And somebody gets in your face about things, you can go a couple of ways with that, can't you? And David could have gotten up and said, put him to death. I don't want to hear this. But he didn't. Sometimes you have a friend that stands up to you, and all you want to do is put him to death because you don't want to hear it. Sometimes you're the one who is going to be put to death because they don't want to hear it from you. Now, David, we know this. We've watched him. He went evil, but he is also a man after God's own heart. We know that truth. And really, you don't want to judge anybody's life until you got the complete picture of it anyway. And God doesn't either, because David is the one. He's the king who is going to be the one who brings along the Messiah. He is a man after God's own heart, and he is a warrior too. I mean, that guy wasn't lying. Hushai wasn't lying when he said, you know, he is a tough dude and he is a warrior. He understands how to fight. But he is also a man who is sometimes too soft-hearted. And he definitely was probably too soft-hearted when it comes to his family. Now, this is real stuff here. And this is real stuff in terms of our lives as well. God works through people in our lives. Like Ittai, you know, the new guy that walks in the door and says, hey, I'm here. And David says, well, this house is coming down, so you might as well run the other way. He said, no, I will stick with you. It could be Zadok or Abiathar, the two priests, the holy man in terms of this place. And David sends them into harm's way with the Ark of the Covenant. Or you could be Hushai, who goes in and gives, he was David's agent, and gives bad counsel to Absalom. And then you got these other three guys, Shobi and Maker and Barzillai, come along and help him out. And then you have Joab here. God works through people. God works through people in your life as well as mine. That's why you need to pay attention. And there are people in our peripheral vision that we need to occasionally look at, like the maid that's in this story, who saves the life of those two priest's sons. We've been talking about friends. And we have friends out there. We have acquaintances. We have people we work with. We have people we go to church with. We have all kinds of people around us in terms of family and leisure and everything else. God works through people like you and me and all these people I've mentioned here. And like you and me, they all have clay feet. They're all human. But as I started this last week, a friend is like a sheltering tree. It's someplace you can get under and get some help. Now, there are different roles in this story, but the key thing that I like to understand about these stories is you can apply them to your life. I know that I have people around me. I play different roles in different people's lives, and so do you. And you are also the star of your movie. You're the king, so you run your life in terms of that. And in this story, the key issue is loyalty, faithfulness. It's really, this is not about the sex that started all this stuff with David and Bathsheba. This is not about that oil. It's all about the loyalty and the issue of things that take place. Now, I'm just giving you a picture here. Now, I want to switch the roles here. Because, well, this is the truth. And I've said it so many times, and buddy, I know it's the truth, is that the way you see the world is not the way the world is. The way you see the world is the way you are. So it has to do with perspective and viewpoint. And how you view that world is the smartest thing you can do is figure out that, you know, I need to be able to see the world as well as I can with God's eyes and not my own. And be able to understand things. And that's why we study the Bible in the first place, is to get a different perspective on how things work in this world so that we don't just rely on ourselves and our viewpoint of things. So I want to switch the viewpoint. We've been working from the viewpoint of David as the king. So it's really been from where he was and all these people that are around him and that are working in his life, but I want to change that perspective. Let's look at this world, chapters 13 through 19, from a different perspective. Let's look at it from the eyes of Absalom. Now, the reason you ought to pay attention to this is because there are six chapters in 2 Samuel that deal with David's son, Absalom, who was not firstborn, by the way. Amnon was the firstborn son. But Absalom is the one in which the kingdom would have taken place, possibly. So I want to talk to you about what might have been and the way that Absalom worked his life. He was a man of high promise. When we looked at the six children of David, that first group of women that he had time with, he was a man of high promise because his name means the son of my peace. Actually, the father's peace. Absalom. The word shalom means what? Somebody says shalom to you, that word means peace. When Jesus is praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, who does he pray to? Abba, Father. If you look at Absalom's name, it is a combination of Abba, Shalom. He is the father's peace, but he was anything but David's peace. But he was a man of high promise. That name could have been a possible prophecy for him, but he wasn't. Amnon is dead because Absalom killed him. Chileab, who was another son, is out of the picture. We don't know what happened to him. But he was never a problem to his father that we know of, which, by the way, is the best gift any child can give their parents. Not to be a problem. This is just observation, but I have seen a lot of children who are anything but not a problem. And one of the things that I've come to realize is that parents who have children who are not problem children, they have peace. Got it? So if you're a child of somebody that's still alive, clean up your act. Don't be a problem. If you have children who are in your life, make sure you don't raise weeds. Absalom, Abba Shalom, Absalom. A father's peace. He was anything but that. I want to talk to you about the kingdom that never happened because that's exactly what Absalom was trying to do. He was trying to usurp the kingdom of David. What might have been? This is a principle, and I really think that this is true. You can believe it or not. You can do whatever you want. You can think that God doesn't exist, for all I know. Those who usurp the place of God's order in their lives in their own way, because they choose their own wisdom in terms of how to live their lives, they're going to be guaranteed a short rule. If you usurp the place of God's order, if you choose your own way, you tune your own wisdom, you're going to run into a lot of trouble pretty quick. You're guaranteed a short rule. Now, when you think about David, or when you think about the Bible, who is remembered, Absalom or David? David. Who is in the genealogy of Jesus? David. Absalom is forgotten. Ultimately, his name is just part of it. Of all the sons of David, what son is remembered? This is not a trick question. Solomon. That's the one we remember. We don't think about Absalom at all. Solomon is the one who had the wisdom and all that goes with that. Now, I want to back up. We're really looking at chapters 13 through 15 through 19, but we're looking at it from the perspective of Absalom. So I want to read to you chapter 15, verses 1 to 12. After this, now, when it says after this, you got to remember what it is. This is after Absalom has plotted. This is after Amnon raped Tamar, and Absalom plotted for 2 years to kill Amnon and got the job done. This is after he ran away from David and went to his grandparents' house and stayed with them for 3 years, and then he comes back for 2 years. So this is at the end of a 7-year period of time when it says, after this, Absalom got himself a chariot and horses and 50 men to run before him. Aren't I something? That's what he's saying. Boy, I am somebody. And Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way of the gate. When any man had a suit to come before the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, from what city are you? And when he had said, your servant is of such and such a tribe in Israel, Absalom would say to him, see, your claims are good and right, but there is no man deputed by the king to hear you. In other words, there's nobody designated by the king to listen to your claims. So he's running down the king. Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were judge in the land. Then every man with a suit or cause might come to me, and I would give him justice. And this is just politics in the thing. I know I could do a better job than that guy. And that's what he was saying. I can do a better job than my father. And whenever a man came near to do obeisance to him, he would put out his hand, take hold of him, and kiss him, and he'd glad hand everybody. Okay? Thus Absalom did to all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. So in other words, he was usurping the place of the king already by stepping in front of it so that the person could never get to the throne room. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Those who usurp the place of God's order in their own way, using their own wisdom, they're guaranteed short rule. So just remember this, but here he is. He's the guy that's doing this. And at the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, pray, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed to the Lord in Hebron. So in other words, he's doing this. He was in exile for 3 years. He comes back for two. This is the second year of that that's starting here. And he says, okay, now let me go down to Hebron. For your servant vowed a vow, which I, while I dwelt at Geshur and Aram, saying, if the Lord will indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will offer worship to the Lord. In other words, he was saying, oh, I need to go down to Hebron and make a sacrifice, some kind of worship experience, because, you know, it's God who has brought me back to Jerusalem and restored me here, and I just need to do this. But this is all conspiracy here. The king said to him, go in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron. Absalom sent secret messengers throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then say, Absalom is king at Hebron. With Absalom went 200 men from Jerusalem who were invited guests, and they went in their simplicity. They knew nothing. In other words, he invited a bunch of people to go with him. They had no idea what he was planning. But sometimes guilt by association takes place. But they didn't know. And while Absalom was offering the sacrifices, he sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, Gilo, and the conspiracy grew strong, and the people with Absalom kept increasing. Now, in this story here of Absalom, from his viewpoint, the rebellion and the temporary overthrow takes place in chapters 16, 17, and 18, and David leaves, and we will look at that. But Absalom here is where I want to really say. He's stealing somebody else's kingdom. Now, in the workplace, in churches, in life, have you ever been a person who has stolen somebody else's thunder? That's what Absalom's doing here. In the workplace, it happens quite regularly. Somebody else tries to usurp somebody else's position, and they steal their thunder as best they can. Have you ever been that person? Have you ever had it done to you? We will always remember the ones that are done to us, because those hurt, do they not? But Absalom is doing that. He's trying to steal his father's thunder. He's trying to steal his father's throne. He's trying to take over the job that his dad has. This happens in corporations. This happens in our lives. I've seen it happens with siblings who try to steal the other brother's thunder or whatever. And we do this kind of stuff. This stuff is very real here. This is the story. I'm glad that it's David and Absalom's story that's written down here and not mine. You know, probably you think the same thing if you're smart enough to take a good look at yourself. Absalom violates some very eternal principles here in trying to steal somebody else's kingdom. And you are a king, by the way. You're the star of your movie. But you know what? Everybody else out there is also the star of their movies. And our universes mesh with one another and rub up against one another. And our kingdoms rub up against one another all the time. And so does yours. What we're learning here in Absalom is, well, from his view, how not to live as a king. Now, I know this. I deal with broken lives and broken homes and people who just go out there and do their own thing all the time, and they are not living up to God's sovereign purpose for their lives. And we sin against one another, and we do all kinds of things. And the fact of the matter is, what it really comes down to, and I know this truth, is that we want to be God. We don't really come out and say it, but we want to. We want to rule over things that are ruining us in our lives. And I guarantee you, we'd sit down at our campfires and we'd talk about our lives and our families and all that stuff, and there are things in our lives right now that are ruining some of us. And we want God to come in and change those things, don't we? Lord, I want you to work in my life and fix it, or fix my kids, or fix my job place, or God, I just need you to do something because We want him to rule over things that are ruining us or that are not going our way, don't we? You don't have to nod your head yes, but that's okay. But we want to interrupt God's intended sovereign purposes in other people's lives, and that's what we do. And so what we do is we try to usurp God's order of things in terms of our lives. Now, that's one of the things that's going on in this story. There's another thing that's going on in that story. I call it moral sloth. Sloth is one of the seven deadly sins. But I saw a cartoon one time that this guy was confessing his sins, and the devil standing right there, and he confesses, I'm slothful. And he says, the devil looks at him and says, you know, I never could really get into that one. It's just too lazy. Sloth, moral sloth. We want God to rule over things that are ruining us, and so we practice more. Fat America blames McDonald's for making them fat. I'm sorry, you have to go in there and say, when they say supersize it, you have to say yes to do that. But fat America wants to blame everybody else but themselves for their issues when it's just a matter of, okay, get out and get off your can and quit watching all the commercials for McDonald's and walk for 10 miles and lose a pound or two. Fat America? I mean, you know, we want him to allow everything that we want to do, and we want God to take away the consequences from our lives in terms of what we want to do. We want to be able to sow our wild oats and then have God allow us to do that and not suffer any consequences. And I think that's exactly what David did in some intents in terms of his parenting. And I, you know, sometimes we have to literally battle our intentionally battle the flaws in ourselves and our sinful tendencies. Sometimes you have to take care of yourself. Sometimes that requires self-discipline. And it's not going to be God delivering us from that and overrule the consequences of the way we live our lives. And I think that that's some of the things. You know, if you look at the life of David, David has his faults in all this. We understand that. We've looked at that. But Absalom is responsible for his own actions. His father's sin may have contributed to the formation of that son, because I never had to teach any of my kids how to be bad. They learned that one by themselves. I didn't have to teach myself how to be bad. I had to have it beat into me a few times that you don't live that way, so that I got it on the inside of myself. You know, the other thing that we're looking at here with Absalom is he is a guy, and I run into this a lot, that he doesn't think there is a God. David may be a man after God's own heart, but I tell you what, God doesn't have any grandchildren. He only has children. And you have to make up your mind to believe that he doesn't exist. People have to choose that. God has nothing to do with me. I'll live my life my own way, and I don't care about that at all. Oh, yeah, I believe there is a God, maybe, but he doesn't have anything to do with me, and I can live my life any way I want to. Now, most people don't say it like that. They just go on and do it. But you have to make up your mind that God doesn't exist, and he doesn't care what you do with your life. And Absalom is a man who makes that decision. He made up his mind to believe that God doesn't exist, or if he does exist, he doesn't care what I do with my life. That's what, you know, and he's maybe over here, and David may be over here, but then there's this big bell curve that takes it, and we all fall into that category at sometimes, because sometimes we make up our mind that God doesn't exist in this particular area of my life. He's okay over here, but he can't be in this area of my life at all. And so we're someplace else on the bell curve. You know, we all have to figure this out. You either have to have faith or not believe it. And we get to make the call, don't we? And as I said, your judgment, your view of the world and of God is not necessarily the way the world and God is. It's just the way you are. And this is one of those places where we're looking at Absalom. He's a man who decides, I'm going to take over my life at this point in time, and God has nothing to do with it. And that's what he does. He had to choose that because he has a father, at least, who he has seen in the temple or the holy places. He's seen a father get on his knees maybe occasionally, but his father never really taught him that, or at least we don't know that. Now, I know this. As I said, you're the star of your movie. How am I doing? Oh, we got to quit. Okay, we're going to come back to Absalom next week, and we're going to chew this boy up before we get done with him. Okay? But we're going to stop here. You can do what you want. If you come back, I know that you want to hear this. If you don't come back, I know. Otherwise, let's pray. Lord, I ask that you take anything that I have said that is worthy of your name and you work it into our lives. And I pray that you open this story up to us that of David. And now we're looking at Absalom, his son in the kingdom, and it never happened. I pray that you give us the pointers we're supposed to get from it, so that we look at our own lives and the people around us, people who are friends, people who we've been friends to, and just the daily living of this life, and help us each day. In Jesus' name, amen. I have to quit.